This is a BloomerBoomer.com podcast with host Andy Asher. It's about news, information, ideas, and tips for living life over 55.
Hi, everyone. I hope your day's going okay. You know, we discuss financial questions a lot here, mostly because, well, it's really important to those of us over 55. After all, a majority of us may retire or cut back on our working hours and the money-making days, so now it seems more important than ever that we want to know everything we can about managing our money. So today's guest is a guy who spent 28 years in the financial services industry, author of the book Who's Watching Your Money, and founder of Paladin Registry. Now, his name is Jack Wehmeyer. And with that resume, you might think that he would be carrying the water for the financial services industry. But no.
I was in the financial services industry in the early 2000s. You might recall between 2000-2002, the stock market suffered a pretty severe crash, primarily tied to the dot-com bubbles that had been created by Wall Street. And I just saw a lot of friends and people I knew that really got damaged based on bad advice. So pretty much based on that little debacle, I decided to write a book. And the book was titled Who's Watching Your Money? The 17 Paladin Principles for Selecting a Financial Advisor. And in fact, even the name Paladin, it stands for just cause. Like a paladin was a knight of the round table, that type of thing. But its actual definition is just cause. And basically our cause became, how do we help investors avoid bad guys and select good guys? That was the basis for the book. Then in 2004, we rolled out a website tied to the principles in the book. And the book sold extremely well. And we started getting a lot of feedback from investors. You know, why don't you use the principles in the book to vet advisors and then profile them in a registry? So if I'm in Chicago, I can go into the Chicago directory and look up vetted advisors. So you're using your experience to help me select a better advisor. And basically we did that. In October of 2004, we rolled out a new version of the registry that had all of the consumer content on it, but it also had a registry of about 300 vetted advisors. It's been the same thing ever since. We provide a lot of investor education on our website tied to four main topics. We have a lot of content about retirement issues, a lot of content about investment, a lot of content about Wall Street, and a lot of content about financial advisors. So investors can come on the website and just view it as a learning experience. But if they're looking for a financial advisor, they then also have access to this registry, which has quite a few vetted advisors all over the country.
That's an interesting comparison to what investing used to be and what it is today.
What we have seen over the years is when you look at Wall Street and the fact that it's basically driven by a very powerful sales culture, and then you look at all of the headlines, you know, like J.P. Morgan Chase last year paid $23 billion in fines for ripping off investors one way or the other, and every major bank, starting with Goldman Sachs on down, has paid big fines for ripping off investors. Because the reality is Wall Street can make more money doing what's best for Wall Street than it can doing what's best for investors. And what we've done is basically looked at it, you know, we help investors understand why Wall Street is doing what it's doing, but the real key is I've seen the headlines, I've got concerns, I don't want Wall Street handling my retirement money if it has this big conflict of interest. So what can I do about it? And what we've evolved towards is the independent registered investment advisor who, yeah, they're in the financial services industry, but they're not owned and controlled by Wall Street business interests. They're in a position to provide independent advice. They're in a position to do what's best for their clients. And they're also compensated with fees. So if an investor doesn't like what they're doing, they terminate the relationship and the fees stop. So that advisor has a vested interest in meeting the expectations of investors. And that's a much, much cleaner relationship, we believe, than sending your money to one of the big Wall Street banks and then hope everything turns out okay. Way too many investors are mesmerized by brand names, when in fact it's the brand names that are paying all the fines for ripping off investors. There's a real paradox there when you think about it. Meanwhile, these investment advisory firms, you know, they're headquartered in Sacramento. They're headquartered in San Francisco. And instead of you dealing with a sales rep for a New York-based firm, you may have the opportunity to deal with the principals of the firm. And so you're dealing with the guys that are calling the shots. And we just believe investors are way better off in that environment.
You talk, too, about different types of retirement situations and the pension plan, which is becoming something of a dinosaur versus a 401k. And it's, you know, if you could just talk a little bit about some of the major sources of retirement assets and what some of those options are and how people can navigate through that.
Yeah, well, look at it, think about it this way. If I'm a baby boomer, chances are less than 20% of boomers are in defined benefit pension plans. A defined benefit plan is a pension plan where the company guarantees a benefit for life. So, and the benefit is guaranteed by the net worth of the company, and it's actually backed up by a federal agency called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. So I've got this benefit for life, and that's how the boomers' parents, they tended to work for companies that had defined benefit plans, and you know, so they've got this benefit for life. Wall Street didn't like defined benefit plans because if the companies didn't fund the plans every year, they created this unfunded liability which had to be carried on their balance sheet, and that tended to depress the value of the stock. So the bottom line is, all these executives around these companies, they started thousands and thousands of them, terminated the defined benefit plans, replaced them with a 401k plan. Now all of a sudden, the employee is funding their own retirement plan, and if they were lucky, they had a nice match from the employer at the end of the year, based on the profitability of the employer. All of the guarantees went the way of the dodo bird. No more guarantees. It was strictly a function of, I contribute money during my working years, I get some matches, I then invest in a series of usually mutual funds, and I'm accountable for my own investment decisions, I'm accountable for the performance. So that means if Bill and George were both investing in the same 401k plan, Bill could have substantially more assets than George when he retired because he simply made better decisions during his working years based on what funds he selected. But the fact that the investor is now, or the consumer is now, responsible for their own performance, you know, the bottom line is not nearly as good as that guaranteed benefit, because now, you know, the amount of money I have for retirement is subject to what's going on in the stock market and what kind of decisions I made, et cetera. The most devastating thing is what happens if your plan was to retire on 12/31/2008. In 2008, the stock market was down 45%, you know, and a lot of your 401k money was in the stock market mutual funds. All of a sudden, you can no longer afford to retire. You're either going to have to defer retirement or retire and take a part-time job because a big chunk of your money went away, and that's not a company liability. That's a personal liability. And then the irony is, when I retire, I get to roll my money into an IRA, and the bottom line is there are no rules that govern IRA rollovers. So, and Wall Street doesn't want any rules because that way it can control more of the assets. And so in a 401k, I had a little bit of protection, trustees and maybe a pension consultant and an actuary or whatever. But as soon as I roll it into the IRA, I'm totally on my own. I'm still accountable for all the performance. I'm still accountable for the investment decisions. I'm accountable for who I hire, and I have absolutely no clue what I'm up against. And that's exactly the way Wall Street likes it, because then marginal stockbrokers and other commission-type reps can come in and become the investor's new best friend, convince them to buy whatever they're selling. And, you know, maybe the problem doesn't come home to roost until they're 75 or 80, but if they make bad decisions when they do that rollover, they will pay for it later. And very few investors are aware of these issues. So that's a big component of our educational process, is increase their awareness so they can make better decisions.
Yeah, that falls into what you talk about, that Wall Street is a mysterious group of big and small companies that invest other people's money, and they're infamous for ripping off clients to benefit themselves.
I think one of the most intriguing questions of all is, you've got, you know, you refer to Wall Street. Okay, what's Wall Street? Wall Street used to be a wall. It was built in the 1600s by the Dutch to protect them from Indians. That's where Wall Street came from, by the way. And then they started trading securities under the Buttonwood tree on Wall Street, and that launched basically the New York Stock Exchange 1,800 years ago. And so Wall Street is out there to basically help companies fund their growth, equity, stocks, debt, bonds. Wall Street served a very specific purpose. Wall Street evolved into a marketing machine. That's the bad news. So rather than helping investors achieve goals, Wall Street makes all of its money by selling product. And the more product you sell, the bigger your office, the more money you make, the bigger your title on Wall Street. In fact, stockbrokers and people like stockbrokers inside the industry, they're referred to as producers. You know, their job is produce revenue. It's not help investors achieve goals. That's a byproduct. Their job, and the way they keep their job, is produce revenue. And again, very few investors know what they're up against when they select these types of people to invest their assets. So the idea is keep increasing their awareness, and hopefully that awareness will then help them make better decisions. Because again, when you're accountable for your own performance, you know, you can delegate investment research, you can delegate investment decision making, but you can't delegate who you select to help you invest your assets. That's something that only the investor can do, and if they make a good decision, their retirement is going to be a lot more secure than if they make a bad decision. Because they're, you know, it's kind of like one of the things we wrote was, is Wall Street your adversary or your friend? Wall Street wants to be your friend. Because what does Wall Street know? People, human nature, you tend to trust people you like. So if I can become your friend, the odds of you trusting me go way up. Once you trust me, what I'm going to do is use that trust to convince you I'm an expert. And if you buy I'm an expert, then when I start selling you particular products, you're not going to question my recommendations, because you don't question the recommendations of experts. So it's a whole sales process, very elaborate, very refined. That's how Wall Street does business. Typical investor doesn't have a clue. They tend to hire the advisor that they like the best, that sounds the best, that tells them what they want to hear, and it's all a sales process. So we call it the Wall Street marketing machine, because it's very refined. They've had decades to hone their sales pitches. The question then is, how does the investor protect themselves from the marketing machine? It starts with awareness. And then hopefully awareness, and then give them more insight into the decisions and the potential ramifications of those decisions. And that helps them make better decisions in the future.
Yeah, and you say that all advisors claim to be financial experts, but of course, 80% of the time, it's not true.
Yeah, it's probably closer to 90, but yeah. I mean, that's part of the sales pitch, where the advisor tells you what you want to hear, because every investor would like to believe their advisor is a financial expert. So I become the self-purported expert. That's what you want to hear? I tell you I'm an expert. Now, the question then is, does the investor have the knowledge to determine who's telling the truth? And that's where Paladin comes in. We give them all kinds of different tools and articles to give them insight into how do you determine if the advisor is a real expert. Is this a sales pitch or is it true? And I'd say 80, 85, 90% of the time, it's a sales pitch. I would say somewhere between 10 and 25% of advisors are either real experts or they're emerging experts. You know, they're still learning and developing, you know, acquiring knowledge, et cetera. So 10% are real experts, 15% are emerging experts. Everybody else is a sales rep. But here's the issue. I can sit down with an investor, and I'm a stockbroker. I work for straight commission. You know, 6 months ago, I was selling used cars. I don't disclose any of that to the investor. What I tell them is, I'm a financial advisor. I'm an expert in my field, and I'm going to help you achieve your financial goals because that's what the investor wants to hear. And if the investor doesn't ask the right questions, there is absolutely no mandatory disclosure requirements for advisors. So I don't have to disclose I was a used car salesman 6 months ago. I don't have to disclose I've got 10 investor complaints on my compliance record. You know, I don't have to disclose anything. It's up to the investor to ask the right questions and then hope I give them a truthful response.
Well, let me ask you, Jack, we have these government agencies that require examination and maybe some background checks. Are those not enough to protect the consumer?
They have some value, but they're worthless if the investor doesn't go online. So when you think about FINRA, FINRA is the main regulatory agency for stockbrokers and the companies that employ them, which are called broker-dealers. FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, they regulate that. But FINRA, and most people do not know this, is what's called an SRO, Self-Regulatory Organization. FINRA is funded by Wall Street. So when you get right down to it, from a FINRA point of view, FINRA works for Wall Street. That's who pays the bills. A lot of FINRA executives have million-dollar salaries, and it comes from Wall Street. So Wall Street is regulating Wall Street. Can you trust that kind of a relationship? I'd say it's a huge conflict of interest. So I think FINRA, for example, does cosmetic things, but it stops well short of providing real transparency for financial advisors. Then you go over to the SEC. You know, keep in mind, Bernie Madoff had an active registration with the SEC, and as far as the SEC was concerned, there were absolutely no problems at Madoff Securities until he turned himself in. And the SEC is also a little suspect because the SEC is controlled by politicians, and politicians receive roughly $300 million a year from Wall Street lobbyists to make sure the regulations favor Wall Street and not the investor. Wall Street calls this protecting the franchise. And so there's regulations that the SEC could create, but they don't. Where Wall Street is winning is all of the responsibility falls on the shoulders of the investor to protect their own interests and to make the right decisions. It's all on the investor's shoulders. You can't assume the SEC is going to save you. And in fact, I can tell you that a number of securities lawyers were in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago, and they were talking to politicians about FINRA and the fact that FINRA has this mandatory arbitration clause in all these securities agreements. And the lawyers obviously have a vested interest in a more open system. And bottom line is the politicians said, we're not going to do anything about that, not even on the agenda. because they receive millions of dollars a year from Wall Street to basically vote the way Wall Street wants them to vote. So the bottom line is you cannot depend on the regulatory agencies to protect you. Even if you could, notice that the agencies don't really come into action until there's been a complaint, like Bernie Madoff turning himself in. Then they roll into action, but by then all the money's gone. So the bottom line is you cannot depend on these regulatory agencies. You have got to learn enough to protect your own interests.
Well, Jack, you've stated a pretty dramatic case, and I want to just leave some time to talk a little bit about how you've stepped in to try to help in a sounds like almost an uphill battle.
We have said that. We sit in meetings all the time, and we say, you know, we probably pick the toughest job on the planet because, to a large extent, we're trying to help investors make better decisions, and the investors don't even know they have a problem. So the bottom line is you're trying to help people that don't know they need help. And then you go over and look at, you know, Wall Street that can spend hundreds of millions of dollars on lobbyists and massive advertising campaigns and all of this. Yeah, it's definitely an uphill battle. But philosophically, you know, we've been doing this for 11 years. A couple of million people have been on our website. We've matched thousands of them to vetted five-star rated advisors in their communities. So we are helping people. We would love to help a lot more people. But step one is they've got to realize that, hey, I'm going to have to learn enough to protect my own interests. And if I'm not willing to commit time to learn, then I basically have opened myself up to a lot of risks that I don't even know exist. You know? That's the real problem. People don't think they need help because Wall Street is that good at hiding the risks. You know, for example, there's no mandatory disclosure requirements for advisors. That's one way Wall Street hides that risk. If an advisor came in and sat down with Mr. and Mrs. Smith and they had to put this one page of information on the table that the Smiths could then read, and it documented his compliance record and his years of experience and his education and his certification and does he have a criminal record and things like that. If he had to disclose all of that on one page, I mean, that would eliminate 90% of it. You know, you wouldn't need Paladin anymore because Paladin's education is all about transparency, disclosure, making the right decisions. FINRA and the SEC could fix this tomorrow if they created a one-page disclosure requirement. It's never going to happen because all of a sudden, all those weak advisors that work for Wall Street are going to have to disclose their weak. People won't buy from them, therefore it damages Wall Street revenue and profitability. So Wall Street doesn't want the investor to know how weak the advisor is because they won't buy from them. It's that simple. So investors are going to have to step up to the plate and take more responsibility. And if you go back to one of your first questions about the 401k plan, now that investors are totally responsible for their own performance, the advisor that they select to help them create that performance, they better realize that if I make a good decision, I'm going to have a lot more money than if I make a bad decision. And if you boil it down to that, then maybe that investor will commit a little bit of time to learning enough to make the right decision. That's kind of what we hope for.
Well, Jack, it's been a really fascinating 25 minutes, and someone who's listened to this, what should their next step be?
Go to our website, which is Paladin with one L, Paladin, registry.com, and just look at the top navigation. It's broken out into those four categories, retirement, investing, Wall Street advisors, and pick the category of information where I want to learn more, and then commit an hour to reading the content on the website. What it's going to do is expose the investor to here's the problem and here's what you can do about it. And that learning curve, which is compressed into, you know, very short one-page articles, they can delve into it as deep as they want to, but at least become more aware of what the issues are. So when they start relying on Wall Street to help them achieve their financial goals, they know what they're getting into, and they know how to protect their own interests.
Well, thanks, Jack. Again, we've been listening to Jack Wehmeyer, and he's founder of Paladin Registry. If you want to check it out on the internet, it's paladinregistry.com. Thanks, Jack, and of course, thank you all for listening.
Thanks for listening to our BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts, and you can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Oh, and we encourage you to leave a comment in the podcast reply section. And finally, we would love it if you'd register to receive our newsletter. Thanks again.